British Public Radio. Documentaries.
Home time outside Christ Hospital School in Lincoln. Like half of all other secondaries in England, the school is now an academy. Creating academies is the Coalition's flagship schools policy, but also one of the most divisive issues in education. So what's persuaded three times as many schools to convert as the government was expecting?
It became apparent very quickly that they were going to make a profit. When I say a profit, I mean a net bonus. The word got round and consequently there was the gold rush.
This programme explores the finances and the philosophy behind the biggest school shake-up in 50 years. We reveal how the £1 billion cost of the Academy's policy has potentially increased by half as much again in just the last 12 months. Plus, what role for the local authority in the new education order?
It's all well and good saying the academy system will be better and that's the way to improve education. But you need a mechanism for making sure it happens. You can't just click your fingers and make school an academy and say, well, that's it, sorted.
And once the academy sign goes up outside their school, what newfound freedoms do head teachers actually have at their disposal?
As academies, we enjoy our independence, but I think independently minded local authority heads can probably make more or less every change that an academy head can do.
In a midterm assessment, we ask what the pluses and minuses really add up to in this academic debate. The end of November 2012, and the NEC in Birmingham plays host to the Academy Show, an event which promises to guide schools through conversion and beyond. And judging by the number of exhibitors pitching their products, it seems there are plenty of companies willing to do the guiding. From the mundane...
We are a fixed asset management provider, an integrated solution that is across the finance, IT and estates departments.
To the must-have...
It's all interactive 3D software. We do systems that vary from 47-inch size screens up to 6 metres.
It's an industry that's ballooned in the last 3 years, along with the number of academies. When the Coalition came to power, there were just over 200 academies in England. They usually replace schools deemed to be failing and were often housed in new, state-of-the-art buildings, paid for with massive injections of cash from the government and sponsors. But the Coalition turned the notion of academies on its head, as former Independent on Sunday editor and education journalist Peter Wilby explains.
Labour used academies to try and raise standards in deprived areas. The Tories said, we'll let you become an academy if you're a highly achieving school. And so academy status suddenly becomes a badge of success instead of a badge of failure.
It was a badge that many schools seemed as keen to pin to their uniforms as the new Education Secretary Michael Gove was to hand it out. Schools which wanted to adopt academy status, known as converter academies, weren't to be denied it for a moment longer than necessary. And so the Academies Act became the first piece of legislation to be put before Parliament under the Coalition. School leaders were soon tempted with talk of being freed from local authority control and being able to manage their own finances. But aside from a £25,000 start-up grant, one thing academy status would not bring, said the government, was a penny more in a school's annual budget.
I retired from headship in 1996. I carried on as a funding consultant for the Secondary Heads Association.
Peter Downes is an education funding expert and a Liberal Democrat on Cambridgeshire County Council. He discovered that a special grant for academies was undermining government promises of parity.
Very early on, in mid-2010, some of the schools in Cambridgeshire were thinking of becoming academies and they were doing investigations about what was involved and what the money would be. And it became apparent very quickly that they were going to make a profit. And when I say a profit, I mean a net bonus. I think of one school, for example, which was going to get £450,000. And they admitted that they could provide all the services they had to replace for £150,000 at the most. They were going to make a clear profit of £300,000.
So why were some academies getting such a massive financial boost? Here's how it works. Academy budgets are calculated exactly as they would be for an equivalent school in the locality. So far, so fair. But academies can no longer rely on their local council to provide them with services to help run the school. Everything from behavioural support to maintaining the kitchen is now paid for by the academy itself. That money has to come from somewhere. So it's taken from local authorities, which the government says save money when schools convert, and given directly to academies. And if that sounds simple, it actually proved to be one of the most complicated calculations in local government. Peter Downs once again.
It got off to a very bad start. Everything was rushed. And of course, when you rush things through, even in quite trivial things, you know, you find you made mistakes. And they made huge mistakes. And they said, well, how are we going to calculate it? So they said, well, what we'll do is we'll look at what we call the Section 251 returns. Now, this is a return, a statutory return that a local authority makes to central government to show how it spent its money, which was extremely crude, because what they didn't realise is that lots of lines on the Section 251 are not directly related to provision of education in schools. They're related to other children's services. The most blatant example is that they included the line regulatory and statutory responsibilities. Now that covers the salaries of the director of education or whatever they're called. Now you can't tell me that if 10% of schools drop out, you can then go to the director and say, well, we will reduce your salary by 10%. So they got off to a bad start. It produced very high figures, which of course was attractive to the schools. And of course heads meet and they talk and they say, oh, by the way, have you heard, you know, the word got round very, very quickly, and consequently there was a gold rush.
The grant, which was proving so attractive to potential academies, is known by the acronym LACSEG, six little letters with the potential to have a big impact on a school's finances. LACSEG should have made becoming an academy financially neutral, both for the schools converting and, crucially, for the government. But it was an equation the Department for Education couldn't seem to balance. And as the number of academies grew, bean counters in Whitehall soon found they had a problem.
Cost of administering the programme, £49 million. Startup grants to converter academies, £43 million.
This is a list of additional costs faced by the department in implementing the academies programme, according to a recent National Audit Office report. Less than 2 years after the first converter academies opened, the sums were beginning to look rather challenging.
Total additional cost in the 2 years from April 2010, £1 billion.
But there was one figure which stood out above the rest, accounting for more than a third of the total.
Difference between funding paid to academies and recovered from local authorities, £350 million.
And it all comes back to LACSEG.
Well, it was incredibly difficult for anyone at the time to say a local authority spent this amount of money on that particular service, and therefore the contribution for the academies is X amount of money.
London Councils is a body that represents all the local authorities in the capital. They questioned the method used by the government to claw money back from councils to help cover the cost of academies. John Rowney is their head of Fair Funding.
Once the school converts, the top slice wasn't necessarily based on the savings that would accrue to that local authority. So by having kind of one less maintained school, there would be an expectation from the government's point of view that savings would be realised. And also the other assumption was that those savings could be realised almost immediately, whereas clearly you have a certain element of fixed costs. What it also meant is because it was kind of a blanket top slice, for some local authorities who had no academies, they still faced the top slice.
Eventually, the government did issue a rebate to councils that had been over-top sliced out of proportion with the number of academies in the area. So did that rectify the early anomalies?
£58 million was returned to local authorities for 11-12, and we're still awaiting the figure for 12-13. Whether that refund is sufficient or not depends on your interpretation of whether the original top slice was correct in the first place.
And there's plenty to suggest that it wasn't. In 2012, the formula had to be amended to reflect that local authorities still have hundreds of responsibilities for all schools, academies or not. These duties were part of a block that totaled more than half of the budgetary amounts on which LACSEG was based. Even the slightest doubt about which responsibilities had been devolved to academies could significantly inflate the grants they received. It was a sign that LACSEG wasn't working. And there were others. Even before the rebate to councils, the Department for Education had already failed to recoup from local authorities more than £100 million of academies' expense in the first full year of the Converter programme. The rationale of the formula meant this amount should have been closer to zero. Eventually, the LACSEG rate paid to individual academies started to fall, but the schools wanting to convert kept on coming.
Whoa, come here. Did I say scarf off? Yes. And then, yeah, shit. In you go, just pause, ladies.
Lincoln Christ Hospital School became an academy in 2011. Deputy head teacher Glenn Thompson admits they followed the money, but says it wasn't about getting a windfall.
We saw the financial figures that were coming out. We took the view that to be able to just sustain the level of provision that we have for our students currently, we pretty much had no choice.
So you didn't get any kind of financial kick from this LACSEG grant? There was no benefit in terms of the cost it was to you as a school to provide those services compared to the council previously?
There was a kick. However, the funding we were losing in other areas, it worked out as a no-score draw, effectively.
So you don't feel that a financial carrot was dangled in front of you, particularly to encourage you to convert?
Financial stick, not necessarily a financial carrot.
Whether to race ahead or just to stand still, schools were seeing a financial advantage to converting. It was the one thing the government said they wouldn't get. We wanted to ask the Department for Education why it had persisted in using a formula which it's since described in its own consultation documents as convoluted and bureaucratic. But they didn't respond to our request for an interview. It seemed LACSEG had become the calculation that created money where none had previously existed. Cash was taken from councils which hadn't necessarily saved it and given to academies that didn't necessarily need it in the quantities they received. And according to Ian Lindley, the education member on Labour-run North East Lincolnshire Council, this financial boon was the key unspoken selling point of the academy's policy.
A very big carrot was dangled in the early stages, and I think that they needed to do that to really kickstart the whole academy project. And I think, you know, they needed to be seen to be successful, and in order to do that, I think there was huge financial carrots dangled. So I think in the early stages, certainly academies were very much tempted into doing it for financial reasons and not actually for the reasons that Michael Gove would like to suggest.
And surveys of school leaders have repeatedly shown finance is the main motivation for considering academy status. But the days of LACSEG largesse are numbered. Next month, the formula is to be replaced. But before it goes, we wanted to put a final figure on how much LACSEG had cost. By last March, it was £350 million, according to the National Audit Office. But the Department for Education wouldn't tell us how much had been added to the bill in the last 12 months. So we've worked out our own estimate. 2 years ago, the department forecast that LACSEG for 2012 to 2013 would cost up to £680 million. We need to deduct from that the £265 million clawed back from local councils this year, but then add to it another rebate for councils which have been over-top-sliced. We still don't know what that'll be, so let's be cautious and assume it's no more than the £58 million handed back in 2011. All of which gives us a LACSEG total for 2012 of £473 million. If correct, it means that in just a year, the £1 billion cost of the Academy's programme has increased by almost half as much again. It also means that a grant supposed to ensure Academies got their fair share and no more has cost over £800 million since the Coalition came to power. We showed our figures to the Department for Education, but they failed to respond to them or any of the questions we submitted about issues raised in this programme. Here's funding expert Peter Downs.
Once they had put the policy in place and they saw what it was doing, it would have been extremely difficult for Michael Gove to say, oops, I've made a mistake, we must stop this, because that would have scuppered the programme, frankly. At least what he ought to have done. He shouldn't have done it in the first place. But once he realised it was going well, he's carried on.
lesser rated schools, which are being allowed to convert now, are obviously not going to get quite the same financial kick as their good and outstanding counterparts did in the first wave.
One of the reasons for my coming here today is to try to alert people to the fact that the money is not going to be the same, and they're going to land themselves, and this is particularly true of small primary schools, they're going to land themselves with a lot of risks, a lot of responsibilities, without the financial bonus.
What response have you had in the seminars when you've raised this point?
I haven't got any of the DfE officials to break down in tears and confess that they've made an awful mistake and that they are basing their lives on a complete fallacy. None of them have said that. But I've had a lot of knowing looks from people round about me who said, those are the crunch questions. But I think most people are here to see if there's anything in it for them. And I don't think there is going forward.
From April, academies and councils will be given the same flat rate to cover the cost of central services for each of the pupils in their care. Councils will also get an additional top-up fee for the responsibilities they still have for academies. It's the kind of simple per-pupil calculation that LACSEG proved incapable of delivering. But it's not quite the end of the funding story. For academies, the government is phasing in the new rate over the next 2 years so that they're sheltered from any sudden drop in funding. But there's no such protection for maintained schools, even though they're just as likely to see a reduction from the level currently spent by their local authority. The result? It will have been 5 years before the government actually achieves the funding equality that it promised back in 2010.
If finance is one factor driving academy conversion, the other is freedom. That's something the government is happy to shout about. And here at the Academy Show, it seems there are plenty of converts to the cause. I've just walked past the main conference hall here and heard somebody I presume was a head teacher proudly boasting to her audience, "Nobody tells me how to run my school." But what kind of constraints do schools and head teachers need liberating from? Nick Weller is executive principal of the Dixons Academies in Bradford and a spokesperson for the Independent Academies Association.
Where I've had frustrations in the past is where I'm directed towards a monopoly of local services, where those people have a right, so-called, to come into my school, and where, you know, I don't respect or rate them, and if I was making a decision to buy something, I would never buy them in. That's an extremely frustrating position to be in.
Are the freedoms afforded to academies, converters as well as sponsored, really as significant as they're portrayed? Admissions, for instance, that's quite a tightly governed area, whether you're an academy or a community school, isn't it?
And it should be too, absolutely. I think a lot of local authority heads, I've been a local authority head myself, my first headship was a local authority headship, I think independently minded local authority heads can probably make more or less every change that an academy head can do. I mean, what is most significant about being an academy is that knowledge and that feeling of independence.
And just last month, a report by the think tank Pearson claimed schools were attracted by a sense of liberation, but then the majority made little use of any freedoms once they acquired academy status. One reason, it was suggested, is that schools already have all the flexibility they need. The government has also announced it intends to extend the most significant academy freedom to set staff pay and conditions to all schools.
So you are due to be rebuilt sometime this year?
Yeah, the money's there. It's a question of planning now in the next 6 to 9 months about how you rebuild a school whilst it's still functioning.
At Baysgarth School in Barton-on-Humber, their deliberations about academy status focused on whether becoming part of a chain might jeopardise plans to link up with new university technical colleges, and so actually give them less freedom. The Chair of Governors is Peter Swan.
What we want is a community-based school linked to industries on the south bank of the Humber and UTCs. Now, that isn't a management structure of a school because it's almost arm's length from a school. It's taking certain children away from the school to a different institution. But our aim was always to look at the children and what was best for them rather than look at the management structures for the school. We felt that was the wrong way round.
And is that something that you feel would have been distorted by academy status?
Yeah, most definitely, because in order to pursue that avenue, the school needed to have the autonomy to be able to do what was right for it, and that meant the head teacher being able to make decisions that left the way open for UTC. Now, if you were part of an academy where there were six or seven other schools involved and your finances were tied up with that, then it was a bit more difficult, really.
Did you get any sense of the parents and even the staff's viewpoint on academies at the time?
I don't think parents fully appreciated what was involved with an academy. We did have meetings about the UTCs, and there was support for that, because there was a tangible link there between jobs, prospects, keeping children in this area and giving them the skills they need to be able to get the jobs that they wanted. An academy was just seen as, well, you know, call yourself an academy if you like, but so what?
While for some it's a mere relabeling, for one player in the education landscape, academies represent much more of a revolution. The local authority, at the heart of education delivery for a century, is now cast as the old guard, ditched and so often derided by schools seeking to escape their control. The last place you might expect to find them, then, is the academy show.
My name's Stephanie Denovan, and I'm the Service Director for Schools and Learning in Wiltshire Council.
Quite surprised to see a few councils here today at the Academy Show. Would have thought you'd have been the pariahs almost of an event like this.
Well, we are supporting our schools in whatever it is that they want to do. So some of them are clearly ready. We've got 32 academies in Wiltshire at the moment. All of our academies actually buy back services from Wiltshire Council. So the ones that are considering becoming an academy, first thing they do is to say, what services can we buy back?
It seems a strange concept, really, doesn't it? That they're trying to get free of local authority control, as we hear about all the time, and then the first thing they do is go back to the local authority for the services they've given up.
But I guess it all depends on really the relationship that you've got with your schools. It doesn't matter to us what type of schools they are. If they're children within Wiltshire, then we're there to support them.
Why do you think it matters to them? If you have got such a good relationship, why do you think so many have gone down the route of conversion?
I think sometimes people think that they're going to get more financial reward by doing that. And I think sometimes they find that when they actually do that, services cost them more in the long run. Again, we're not there to judge what people want to do. If that's what they want to do, we will support them in doing it.
Other authorities admit to a more practical motivation. North East Lincolnshire has one of the highest take-up rates of academy status. Councillor Ian Lindley says trading with academies is vital to the level of service that can be provided to those schools which choose not to convert.
We're in a difficult position, really, because we need a substantial quantity of the work being brought to us from the academies. If very few services are being required, then that begs the question of us, is that sustainable from our position and financially viable? It may not be.
Academy numbers are much higher than the Department for Education was forecasting. But the pattern of conversion means that in some councils, they remain, for Michael Gove, frustratingly low. The Secretary of State has found himself at the centre of several battles where he's intervened to force the conversion of individual schools deemed to be failing. But now there are signs of a wider approach, targeting whole authorities. Earlier this year, it was announced Ofsted would be inspecting councils whose performance compared unfavourably with similar areas. Meanwhile, it seems the Education Secretary is also maintaining his own personal interventions. Last November, just days before the publication of new primary school league tables, Michael Gove sent a letter to MPs in Lancashire, where just 3% of schools have become academies. It told them that the county had the highest number of underperforming primary schools in the northwest, and said academy conversion was the best remedy. What it didn't say was that on every school's benchmark, Lancashire was above the national average. Nor did it mention that the unpublished league tables were about to reveal the number of primaries which were failing had fallen by two-thirds. It infuriated a fellow Tory, the leader of Lancashire County Council, Jeff Driver.
We weren't in the position that they were thinking we were in. The figures were out of date, and the schools that they referred to have been part of our plan to improve education, and in the vast majority of the schools that he named, it was working. So if we're actually improving education in those schools, why would we want to put at risk that improvement by imposing something on the schools that they didn't want to happen?
Do you think he misrepresented the situation in Lancashire deliberately?
Well, you asked me two questions there. The figures quoted were wrong. Whether it was done deliberately, I don't know. I have my suspicions about some of the officials in terms of the line they were taking, but I really don't know whether it was deliberate or not.
According to Mr. Gove, the stance of councils like Lancashire that might be somewhat resistant to academies makes you ideologues, trots even.
Yes, I have been called a lot of things in the past. That's the first time I've been called a trot. But you can't just resist something for the sake of resisting and saying, well, we're not happy with that and the schools are not happy, so therefore we're going to resist. You can't do that. That would be irresponsible. But provided you've got a mechanism that says, well, look, that school's not doing as well, so this is what we're going to do about it, we can defend it, and we're not just resisting for the sake of it. So we're able to say to Mr. Gove, look, we're improving. Leave us alone.
Leaving councils alone appears to be the last thing on the Education Secretary's agenda. From April, Ofsted will also be inspecting local authority school improvement performance. That's a responsibility Councillor Driver says has to be taken locally, but which is weakened by the Academy's policy.
One of the things I have about the Academy programme in general, it's all well and good saying the Academy system will be better and that's the way to improve education. But you need a mechanism for making sure it happens. You can't just click your fingers and make school and academy and say, well, that's it, sorted. Standards will inevitably improve. And it can't be micromanaged from the centre. I don't think anybody thinks it can.
The role of local authorities in education has changed over a decade or more, hasn't it? More to one of coordination and commissioning. Isn't the Academy's policy just an extension of that?
No, it's a bit more than that, because if they become an academy, if they choose, the academy can just have nothing to do with the education authority. And it's a fairly open secret. We have an academy in Lancashire now. Since it became an academy, the standards of education have fallen. And all we can do is point that out to them. And we don't have any authority or any position that we can say, look, this is not good enough, we're going to do this to improve it. So it's much more of a change than what's happened in the past.
You wrote quite a strongly worded letter in response to Mr. Gove and asked for a meeting. What's the position with that? Have you heard back?
We did write a strongly worded letter, but I think people need to remember that was in response to a very strongly worded letter, and it pointed out in very clear terms where Lancashire stood and what we intended to do. And in terms of response, yes, I have very recently had a response that is saying we need to meet, and that's what I'd asked for in my letter. And Mr. Gove has written back to me personally and said, yes, we do, and he's going to get his secretary to arrange that.
The speed and spread of academy conversion has left a radically altered school sector in its wake, along with some significant questions about the future. For a start, there's the P word, profit. Direct profit making in schools by taking a cut of their budgets is currently not allowed, but press reports earlier this year suggested it might be up for discussion for inclusion in the next Conservative Party manifesto. For Nick Weller, executive principal of the Dixon's Academies in Bradford, that would undermine the whole basis of the Academies movement.
There are possibly some large private companies that might want to get into the Academies movement and might want to sponsor and might feel they can supply backroom services at a cheaper rate, more effectively and more efficiently. I'm not convinced that's going to work, A, because school improvement is not primarily about backroom services, it's about teaching and learning. Unless you've got an academy sponsor that's got its brain around that, then nothing's going to happen anyway. And even if somebody from the private sector is more efficient than, say, we are at the moment, once we've learnt from them and we're as efficient as they are, I'm not redirecting any funding to shareholders. There must be some, in the same way that I don't want local authority creaming off, there must be, in a sense, creaming off. If it's private sector, some money will be directed away from supplying a good education to children, and that in the end is going to be a detriment, it's not a positive.
While any future plans for profit making are far from certain, the government does appear wedded to the sponsorship model of academy conversion. That's where a charitable trust takes over the running of a group of schools to form an academy chain. It was the success of sponsored academies in particular, rather than converters in general, which the Department for Education highlighted when this year's league tables were published. Their improvement rate did make for a better headline, but some academies which have decided to go it alone wonder whether they have only fulfilled half of the government's ambition for them. On dinner duty at Christ Hospital School, deputy head teacher Glenn Thompson explains why standalone converters like his feel as though the academy chains are being treated like teacher's pet.
Currently I'm just putting together capital bids for projects for maintenance, and just that one aspect alone, these big academy chains have been given the opportunity to draw off an element of this money that they can then spend across their academies. It feels as though, again, they're starting to work to a different set of rules to the ones that the rest of us work against. It doesn't make for a level playing field educationally.
That money is from the academy's capital maintenance fund. Four academy sponsors have received a guaranteed share of the pot in each of the last 2 years, in what the government describes as a pilot scheme, while standalone converters have to take part in a competitive bidding process. Neither the Department for Education nor any of the academy chains we contacted would reveal the size of the share that was awarded. We also asked the department whether it favoured converter academies coming under the sponsorship of an umbrella trust, but it didn't respond. Currently, fewer than a third of academies are part of a chain.
The academies movement is about more than just racking up, you know, the numbers of conversions. It's got to be about driving improvement in the system. The academies movement is full of sponsors who have made a tremendous difference in their schools. Where that isn't happening, those schools need to be redirected to those chains and those sponsors. So I think there will be some academies that will probably fall over. But as I say, within the system, there are a whole host of very, very strong sponsors. You know, absolutely outstanding chains of outstanding schools, and they, I'm sure, are ready and waiting to take those schools on.
Nick Weller from the Independent Academies Association.
Yeah. So we've got year nine. How are they doing?
Jack's just come up with the song.
Are you sing, miss?
Oh, no.
Go on, miss, just sing just a little bit.
Oh,
do you think she should?
Yeah.
And what future for those schools which reject the academy concept in any guise? Half of all secondaries have converted, but at Leek High in Staffordshire, they've taken a different route. Head teacher John Spencer explains why his school is now part of what's called a hard federation.
You better move on swiftly, sir.
That was all recorded, by the way. Okay, thank you. There are two high schools in Leek. It's only a very small town. And I think when you've got two high schools in a small town, you've actually got unnecessary competition. You don't necessarily provide good value for money if we are running one small sixth form in Spanish and the school across the other side of town is running one very small sixth form teaching Spanish. There's a great deal of expertise, there's a great deal of trust. I think it's a way forward. It's a way that we can cooperate together and provide better opportunities for our kids. It's clearly bearing fruit. I mean, I've just come from a meeting where I've been meeting with a representative from Derby University. And I think if we can get the university on board, if we've got the two high schools on board, it enhances the opportunities for youngsters. That's what we're about. What would be the best route for the kids? What's the best for the kids? And you don't answer that question by being competitive. You answer that question by being cooperative.
In deciding against conversion to an academy, you're part of a significant minority now. Do you think that's a sustainable position for you for the future?
There doesn't seem to be a shortage of money in education if you're doing the sort of things that Mr. Gove wants. If you want to set up a free school, there seems to be a huge amount of money around the place. There's money dangled if you want to be in an academy. It's just that it goes against my values. I will not stand out as a point of principle and make the situation for my kids worse. So is it sustainable? Probably not.
Back at the NEC, Cambridgeshire councillor Peter Downes is cautiously optimistic about the future, but says the academy's programme presents all kinds of unnecessary challenges.
I anticipate a fragmentation and a polarisation of schools over time. I don't know how we're going to put it right, quite frankly. It's going to be very, very difficult to turn the clock back. Standards do not rise through system change, they don't arise through competition, they arise when people collaborate and share good practice. And I still have, in my heart of hearts, a trust in the professional wisdom of teachers and head teachers and governors that will save the day, but it's going to be a very difficult few years.
So has the Academy's policy really chalked up the biggest overhaul in education since the introduction of the comprehensive school? Education journalist Peter Wilby doesn't think so.
I think it's an irrelevance educationally. The most important thing about a school is not what it's called. That's the least important thing, actually. What really matters, above all else, is who are the children attending them? Who are the teachers teaching inside them? Those are the things that matter most about a school.
Aren't academies really just the latest incarnation of foundation schools, grant-maintained schools and all the rest?
Yes, we've had various incarnations. I think it's the aim of every Secretary of State who comes on the scene to try and leave their mark. Education secretaries come and go and they want to create a new kind of school and they want something to be set up that people will remember, oh yes, that was Michael Gove or that was Kenneth Baker or that was David Blunkett that started those schools, you know. They just want to leave some monument behind them.
The show is now closed. Please can all visitors make their way to the exit. We hope you have all had a successful day. Thank you.
As the curtain comes down on the Academy show in Birmingham, those schools that couldn't make it have just a few months to wait until the next, even bigger event designed to encourage them to become masters of their own destiny. If, in the long term, that freedom, real or imagined, is judged to have been a success, this debate will be quickly consigned to the history books. But if at any point the Academy's experiment is deemed to have failed, it will have proved a costly lesson, and one the future generations of children and politicians could be left to learn the hard way.
To join in the debate on Twitter, use the hashtag #AcademicDebate. An Academic Debate was written, produced and presented by Paul Faulkner. Music was from TonyLongworth.com, with incidental music by Colin Hives. This was a British Public Radio presentation.